Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to our listeners for participating in Garth Brooks karaoke. I got to say, Joe, I'm pretty impressed. When I saw some people call in, I thought, all right, maybe one person could be good and the rest could be train wrecks, which honestly I was looking forward to. But I will say all four of our participants that called in to sing, Tim, Brandon, Joe, Randy, all did a pretty good job.
They did. No, it was. Does this mean that Garth Brooks is overrated?
I don't know. No.
No? Okay.
It does not.
I'm just throwing it out there.
That is not going to be tolerated here on this show.
I got to get a little shot in on country music, right?
I guess so.
Yet he knows all the words.
Michelle, are you a big Garth Brooks fan?
I'm a country fan, but honestly, I only knew, like, the first one.
Well, to be honest, Michelle was not alive when most of these songs came out from Garth Brooks.
Okay, so you're a country fan. Florida Georgia Line?
Yes.
Oh, you and Robbie are going to butt heads.
Oh, boy.
Robbie, you don't like them?
I like country music. I don't know that I would describe what they do as country music.
They're so, like, driving windows down.
Yeah.
Country-ish, pop-ish music.
Pop-ish is more like it. Yeah.
So, wait, does that mean you like new? Is that would that
That's
be
new country,
new
music.
Country
yeah.
music?
Oh, yeah.
And you like old country music?
My,
is it that simple?
Look, for the most part, and there are exceptions here and there. I like John Party. I like Luke Combs. Like a lot of Eric Church. Not all of Eric Church, but a lot of Eric Church. There are, I would say, about 2008, 2009 is where I draw the line on country. 2009 and before, usually pretty good with. Right around 2010, 2011, 2012, it started to go downhill, in my opinion. I know a lot of people feel differently. That's fine. I have no ill will towards that. But so, about mid-2000s, late 90s country guy right here in Robbie Stanley.
Other than FGL, give me another three or four artists that really bother you.
There's a lot of artists that really bother me. Let's see here.
Like Big and Rich?
I don't really listen to much of them. I wouldn't say they bother me.
Okay.
But, no, they're not very good.
Yeah.
Like, Michelle, who are your favorite country artists?
I like Eric Church.
He's good.
Luke Combs.
He's good.
Rascal Flatts.
So that's a little old school. I can handle that.
We know you like Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I actually do. Taylor Swift.
You like Taylor Swift's entire catalog?
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Taylor Swift's awesome.
She's great. Hendersonville native.
And she's friends with you. So
friends with me.
Makes her even cooler.
Good start. So look at Michelle's eyes. We've not told her this story.
You're kidding me.
No. I have to tell you this coming up later.
It's a long story.
We'll get to that a little bit later. Maybe one day that'll make the airwaves. It's not going to be today, though.
Katie and Caroline went to the Taylor Swift concert at Nissan Stadium. Said it was unbelievable. I was actually jealous. I would have loved to have gone to that.
Jim on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, saying, can't wait for the Creed singing contest. That may need to happen. We might need to have a Creed singing contest.
But the problem is, I don't think anyone will pay to watch them now anymore,
it
right?
It doesn't necessarily have to be to go watch one of their concerts.
Just to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that could be good.
Neil texting in, today's country isn't country music. I'm with you, Neil. It's different. Now look. Genres of music evolve, right? Country music has evolved. I prefer late 90s, early 2000s.
I mean, look, I like very little music after like 1994. So, yeah. So, I mean, hey,
we know.
It's fine.
But as we found out, you know, I'm a musical savant here on the show with all my great musical takes that I have, which you appreciate.
Right. Yeah. The god awful Beatles. Maybe we should have a Beatles
Maybe so.
Content.
Nate texting in, what about Dierks Bentley? Dierks Bentley's fine. I like Dierks Bentley. I prefer Dierks Bentley, like early Dierks Bentley, rather than now. But, yeah, I like it.
Okay. So Florida Georgia Line seems to be just the real.
Florida Georgia Line's not great. It's not very good.
They rocked it.
I know.
The Titans did their.
Not a big Luke Bryan guy. Just not a big Luke Bryan guy.
Okay.
I mean, look, I'm sure a lot of people like these artists, obviously.
The Barbershop Harmony Society is offering to come on and sing something.
Oh, really? Well, might have to take him up on that.
Yeah. like, the Acapellas.
Xavier texting in, 90s women's country is unmatched. A little bit of Shania Twain in there. Pretty good. Shania Twain may be the GOAT. It's hard to beat.
Yeah, okay.
This one's for the girls.
Yep, that's right. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. All right, Joe, I've seen the team come out from Seattle after the expansion draft last night. Look, and I know some people fell into this trap after Vegas as well, but I look at the team with the cap space they have available, and they still have a ton of cap space that they're able to spend. I don't think the team's very good. I came away from the Kraken's draft last night. There's a lot of young players, a lot of borderline AHL, NHL players, some prospects. And in the players that they did select at the NHL level, you've got Mark Giordano coming in from Calgary, who's at the back end of his career. Guys like Callie Yarncroke selected as well, Brandon Tanev from Pittsburgh. But there's not a ton of big names there. As a matter of fact, there's not really any big names selected by Seattle in this draft. Jamie Oleksiak from the Stars. There's some good pieces. They look like they could be pretty solid, especially on defense. But they don't look like that good of a team to me. Like I don't think, and I realize Vegas is a high bar anyway, and no matter what team that Seattle drafted, I would not expect them to get to the Stanley Cup final. So I realized that part of it. But like Vegas was competitive and good from start to finish in their expansion draft year. I don't think that's going to be the case in Seattle. I look on that paper, the team on paper, I don't think it's all that good. So what did you think of the Seattle expansion draft and the route that Ron Francis and Seattle appeared to take, which was playing more of the long game, kind of getting some younger borderline developmental guys in there and not necessarily going for some of the big names that they had available to them in the expansion draft?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I thought that they would take a couple more swings in there somewhere, you know, to bring on some money and some – like, I did think – I thought Tarasenko would be something they'd think of. But, you know, you also have to look at, like, the specific alternatives. I mean, Vince Dunn is a very nice pick for them, you know. So maybe if there wasn't a Vince Dunn, maybe they'd take a chance on that. But, of course, the trade freeze ends today at noon our time. And so you would expect maybe some moves. I mean, you've got to create a farm system for yourself. You know, you've got to, you know, you're starting everything, not just like next year's team. So it reads to me like, I guess Ron Francis looked at what Vegas did and said, if you think that even with these rules that we can be really good right away, it's not the smart way to do it. Let's try to be young and build something and use some of these players, because obviously they have too many, to get picks, prospects, and build toward that. But it's I would call it underwhelming. I was kind of looking forward to just a couple more big names to make it interesting. And as you've pointed out, I mean, they're in a pretty opportune division next year.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I'm not really all that impressed with their draft. I still think there's a chance they make the playoffs, largely because of the division they play in. Like, it's not very good over there out in the Pacific Division.
It's pretty wild.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff texting in, Joe, you need to check out some alternate country that doesn't come out of Music Row. Sturgill Simpson's album, quote, A Sailor's Guide to Earth.
Yeah.
You need to check out.
Well, I like him. I don't know him extensively, but I absolutely like Sturgill Simpson. Do you consider him country?
I think the way that was described, alternate countries, is good.
Alternative country?
Yeah.
No, I would – I mean, I actually – it's one of those things, like, I tell myself I'm going to do, like, a lot of things. Like, hey, I'm going to get in shape and, you know, cook more and get into Sturgill Simpson. I just haven't done it yet. But, no, I'm intrigued. He's interesting.
He is. It's good stuff.
Pretty good.
Absolutely. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. How do the Predators recover from the loss of Callie Yarncroke? How big a deal is that loss for the Predators after the expansion draft last night? We'll get into that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be right back. Join 102.5 The Game Saturday from 5 to 7 p.m. for the Nashville SC pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the match on Broadway and get some game swag. Plus, register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Then head on over to Nissan Stadium for the 7:30 match. Get your tickets now for Nashville SC at NashvilleSC.com and tune into the match on ESPN 94.9. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, reacting to the NHL expansion draft last night. Cali Yarncroke selected by the Seattle Kraken. The Predators have now lost in the last few weeks. Yarncroke, Victor Arvidsson via trade, Ryan Ellis via trade, and Pekka Rinne via retirement. So, Joe, that is a lot of turnover in this room. And Yarncroke, a guy that probably a little underrated in his time here with the Nashville Predators, certainly nationally, but I think even here locally as well. Yarncroke did a lot of things. If you needed him to play center, he'd play center. If you needed to put him on the wing, he could go there. First line, he could play there. Fourth line, he could play there. He did almost everything for this Predators team while he was here. Now, I'm not going to sit here and act like losing Cali Yarncroke is just a tragedy for this Predators franchise or anything like that, or an insurmountable loss that they can't overcome, because it's not, and I don't believe that. But I do think this is a pretty significant loss on this roster. He's 29. He'll be 30 when next season begins. Played very well for the Predators last year. 15 goals for them. Was awesome during the regular season. Really from start to finish in the regular season. He was one of the few guys last year that played very well. In your opinion, as you look at this loss and even the decision to not protect him, how big a deal is this for the Predators? How big a deal is this moving on with life without Cali Yarncroke now that he's been selected by Seattle?
It hurts. I mean, I think it hurts this coming team. I mean, this is a guy who over the past six seasons has averaged almost 15 goals a season. He's pretty consistent. He's going to get you right around there and be a threat, you know, a nice complimentary scorer to go with just being, for lack of a better term, a Swiss Army knife, you know, for your team. At low cost, and he is the kind of guy, and I think this is beyond just what he would do to help the team on the ice. I think he's the kind of guy who might be attractive to a contender on a buying binge at the next trading deadline. And so there's an asset that you lost that you could have potentially spun into more picks if that's what you're trying to do.
But I don't think that's what they're trying to do.
Well,
like I think they legitimately believe that this team can be competitive next year. And I don't know that they believe they could be a Stanley Cup contender, but I think they believe this team can be competitive. And like, I don't know. I mean, the jury is still out.
I think they may be wrong.
Well, I think they may be wrong too. And I just – look, the jury's still out. There's a lot still left to come, and Halla and Granlund are going to be a big part of that moving forward. But I think David Poile and the Predators, they believe that – Tanner Janot, Yakov Trenin, all these young guys that we've talked about a lot this offseason, that they're going to be here for the next 3 to 5 to 7 years, and this is going to be kind of the next wave coming up through here. But again, though, like, is Tanner Janot really going to be selected by Seattle? Maybe. And now that I've seen Seattle's picture last night and the route they went, I buy in a little bit more to maybe the possibility of Tanner Janot being selected. But again, if he is... like, is Tanner Janot really all that irreplaceable? I don't think so.
Then you've got a really nice fourth line of Sissons, Olivier, and Trenin, which was doing very well last year before Janot, to his credit, was a bit of a revelation. But, yeah, maybe. Maybe they would have taken Janot. I don't know. I mean, I suspect that had they protected Yarncroke, I think they would have taken Sissons, but we'll never know. Look, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, they want to be competitive. So the competitive rebuild – that's kind of an interesting part of this, too. So does a competitive rebuild mean that you never have any step back?
Well, that's living in fantasy land, if that's what they think.
Because I think, you know, again, if this year turns into – if David Poile doesn't take a chunk of change or make another huge trade, you know, then this is a youth movement kind of team.
Yeah.
To a large extent, which, again, I mean, I think there's a very real possibility that team could show promise – could help you build towards something and still not make the playoffs. And still, to me, then, there is nothing wrong with adding to your draft capital, right? I mean, you've been cutting into it for years on the bye. I mean, is it such a would it be like this massive setback to not make the playoffs 1 year and sell off a couple of your veterans and get more picks? Does that mean then it's a full on rebuild?
I don't think so.
So that's where I look at Yarncroke as realistically someone who on a team that isn't quite good enough to be in the playoffs could have helped you with your futures a bit.
Well, the other part of this, and I keep going back to this on a daily basis, but it's very intriguing to me, and that is Arvidsson is gone. Ryan Ellis is gone, and now Cali Yarncroke is gone. And you talk about two of probably four guys in that room that Philip Forsberg is the closest to are now out the door in Cali Yarncroke and Victor Arvidsson. I'm not saying that that's going to end up making all the difference in whether or not he decides to sign a contract here. Maybe it makes no difference. I don't know. I just try to think about it from his shoes. You've got a team that right now, and I laid out the roster earlier, and we'll do that again coming up a little bit later this hour. But right now, it's very debatable on the team as is of whether or not it's a playoff team. I mean, it just is, in my opinion. I think that's a huge debate. How does Forsberg view that? Does he think it's a playoff team? Does he not? How close does he think this team is to maybe making some noise and truly being a contender for the Stanley Cup? And you factor in addition to that, now Arvidsson and Yarncroke, who he is very close with, are now gone. Does that change the way he views this team? I don't know, but it's something that you've got to at least think about, I think, if you're David Poile and the Predators at this point.
Yeah, well, you bring up a good point there because I hadn't even really thought about Yarncroke in terms of, like, Forsberg friendship. I mean, a lot of these guys on this team have been close. I mean, a lot of the guys on this team are friends with Ryan Ellis, too, right? And yep. He's been a leader, a key part, a focal point of that locker room, and he's gone now, too. But we saw Forsberg's reaction to the Arvidsson trade. I wonder what he thought the first moment he realized that Yarncroke was going to be left unprotected.
I mean, I can't imagine he's that happy about it. Now, the protected, unprotected thing's a little bit different because there's just a lot of different things to keep in mind with your protected list.
But, I mean, if you're Forsberg, I mean, look, I'm sure you like Tanner, right. But wouldn't you have also been a little bit like, really?
Right.
I mean, like most people were?
Well, yeah, but like Forsberg was probably looking at the protected, unprotected list and saying, huh, Johansson's not on that, huh? How about that?
Well,
there's a little bit different of a viewpoint when it comes from him.
That's a good point. There's a lot of things that have gone on that a lot of the players, I'm sure, are about like, really?
Yeah. Like I watched Ryan Ellis's introductory press conference the other day with Philadelphia. He's not very happy that he got traded.
It sucks to be in Philly, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, hey. That works out there because no city in this country is quicker to get nasty or boo their own players than Philadelphia.
Yeah, maybe let's see how good he had it here. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyler texting in, I'm worried about the Preds going young and developing them over the years just for Poile to trade them away for nothing in 3 to 4 years from now. So Tyler worried about going through a development process and then David Poile trading them away.
Well,
I mean, that's part of the business. Like, sometimes I'm sure that this roster 3 to 4 years from now, I'm sure will look very different. I'm sure some players will still be here. Some players won't. That's just the nature of the business in the NHL.
I mean, the way it's been set up, and again, Poile talking competitive rebuild, I mean, there's just a ton on guys like Tomasino and Tolvanen and Glass and even, the Janots and Trennans to some extent. But especially those guys, I mean, you're not going to do anything or really compete if you don't have several forwards who, can be offensive threats. As you've said many times, offensively challenged team, forward challenged team, some guys not playing up to their salary level, but now some guys who there's just a lot that's going to be on their shoulders unless there are things to come this offseason that we just aren't anticipating. But I'd be very surprised because now if you make some other big move here, other than signing Granlin. I mean, what's the point of bringing in a Glass? I mean, what?
Well, it's the thing. You've been going young, so are you now going to? Oh, I know we were going young, but hey, let's go get Gabriel Landeskog. Hey, let's go make a run at Taylor Hall. Let's go do all these other things. Like I you know, there are people on Twitter yesterday and people that have texted into the show, just kind of waiting on the next big move to drop from David Poile and the Predators. And I'm not sure there's another big move coming. Like, I think Saros is going to be re-signed. They're probably going to re-sign Granlund. Like, my guess is that deal gets done. And I think that's obviously very important.
It's in purgatory.
It's in purgatory, according to Adam Vinken's report yesterday. Todd Diamond, who is the agent for Granlund, says talks are in purgatory, which I don't know that I've ever heard that described that way.
Yeah, so have they moved up from hell, or have they moved down to purgatory? Where'd they come from?
I don't know. That's a good question. That was an interesting description that Vinken had in the article yesterday. But outside of that, like I don't know that a gigantic move is coming. I don't see it. I got a texture that says Cali Yarn Kraken as a name, by the way. Cali Yarn Kraken.
Who did this?
There's no name.
Keith, you got competition.
Cali Yarn Kraken. That's pretty good.
That's fantastic.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. And also, I'll lay out my current roster for the Nashville Predators when we come back. Is it a playoff team? We'll get to that next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't miss the first ever Smashville Summer Spectacular presented by Lee Company, featuring something for everyone in the family today through Sunday. Preds giveaways, ice making seminars, job fair, Nashville locker room sidewalk sale, photos with the King Clancy Award, which was just won by Pecorine, and the Norris Trophy, won in 2020 by Roman Yossi, and much more. It's a free event, plus enter to win lower level half season tickets. Visit NashvillePredators.com/spectacular for full event details. This is a weekend that you don't want to miss. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, discussing the Nashville Predators losing Cali Yarncroak in the expansion draft last night to the Seattle Kraken. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Taylor from Fort Campbell texting in, Cali is Kraken lacking. There's a lot of things you can do with the Seattle Kraken, too.
That's pretty good, but Yarncroken is special. Special ring to it.
It's pretty good. CC texting in, the players need to look in the mirror at themselves before getting angry with anyone else. They begged to stay together and wasted their opportunities. No way the team could stay the same, and the organization expect fans to fill the arena. The team's recent history demonstrates you can't build a successful team based on players' feelings. I don't think there's any question about that.
Right, but what we're talking about is, does Forsberg want to sign an extension?
Right, and that is based on his feelings.
Right. So I totally agree when you're – and this goes to the John Hines discussion. I wrote a column today about the Preds, by the way, at theathletic.com. And, you know, touched on the Hines stuff a little bit, you know, and obviously Victor Arvidsson wasn't a fan. And we know Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson have had run-ins. But the bottom line is, like, someone commented on the column, like, you know, the player's going to quit on the coach and whatever. So you're going to sabotage yourself? I mean, you're a professional.
Right.
Do your freaking job.
That's the thing.
Like, this does not have to be, you know, la-la land where everyone loves each other.
No.
I mean, you got to be professional and do your job. And I'm going to continue on the Hines front to say, and you've said it too, you don't do what they did last year if there's some huge locker room mutiny happening or on the verge of happening. Some guys have been unhappy. Show me the team where everybody's always happy with the coach. But this discussion about Forsberg and about Ekholm is about when it comes up that you would like to continue playing for this organization. Now you have the choice of re-signing, of extending, or would you like to be on the market? Well, these things could add up to Forsberg rethinking that. That's the point.
You know who at times wasn't liked all that much by his players, but pretty good coach? Scotty Bowman.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Scotty Bowman, probably not the most popular coach in history. He was pretty rough on the players that played for him. Maybe the greatest coach in the history of the league.
It worked out okay.
Yeah.
It worked out okay. You know, as a go back to being a young Detroit Red Wings fan.
By the way, not comparing John Hines to Scotty Bowman, for anybody throws that at me.
Ah, yes. Tweet that, somebody. Yeah. Tweet that out. You know, I loved Jacques Demers. He was just like the nicest guy, and he was the coach that got them to a certain point, and he was Stevie Y's coach. Like, you know, everybody liked Jacques Demers, right? And to your point, a lot of people didn't like Scotty Bowman. Now, you could also say, show me the coach who doesn't win with that collection of players.
Sure.
But he figured out ways. He pushed buttons, and a lot of times it didn't make guys happy, but it worked out. Listen, there's a lot of great college football players over the years at different places who I think played well because they were pissed at Nick Saban. So there you go. He's the best college coach of all time.
So, Joe, I put this together yesterday, which, by the way, I mean, if you're ESPN, you're just irate yesterday because all the picks for Seattle started leaking out right around 11 o'clock. Like, Frank Saravalli was just single-handedly just totally blowing up the entire expansion draft yesterday. Chris Johnson reporting around 11 o'clock yesterday morning that Callie Yarncroke was going to be the member of the Predators selected by Seattle. So we basically knew what Seattle's team was going to look like before they ever took the stage last night on ESPN at the expansion draft. But when I heard Yarncroke was going to be the selection, number one, not surprised. But number two, I put together a lineup of the current roster for the Predators. And that means I'm not putting Eric Halla in there. He's not under contract. I'm not putting Mikhail Granlund in there because he is not under contract. I am just basing it on the current lineup for the Predators. And here's what I came up with. First line of Forsberg, Johansson, and Tolvanen. Second line of Cunning, Duchesne, Tomasino. Third line of Cousins, Cody Glass, who they just got back in the Ryan Ellis trade, and Rocco Grimaldi. And the fourth line of the Hurd line, Trennan, Sissons, and Janot. You could swap Olivier in there as well at some point. And then on defense, Josi and Carrier, Ekholm and Fabro, which I know that gets people's ears perked up, having Fabro back with Ekholm. We'll talk about that here in a minute. And Benning and Myers. I realize there are four right-handed shots there. Those, to me, are their six best defensemen that they have on the roster. Saros, and then who in the world knows who their backup goaltender is going to be. What do you think of that lineup? It's very young. Is it a playoff team? That is my question to you, because it was incredibly, it was divisive yesterday, people responding to the lineup. Some people love it. They think the Predators are in great shape. Had a lot of people say, man, that lineup is rough, and it looks like an NHL lottery team. What is kind of your thoughts on the lineup that is currently there for the Nashville Predators, albeit with moves still to come this offseason?
So if I'm a Vegas handicapper, which I should be based on what I've done on Weekly Winners, Joey the Greek, I'm ready, Vegas. That lineup that you laid out, you know, like the over-under or whatever, the odds would be it's not a playoff lineup, okay? Now, could it be? Yes, but there is a lot that has to break right for you. And starting with, I think that fans will look at that lineup. A lot of fans will say, you know what, I'm interested in watching that team. And that's good because the Preds want people to keep coming and wanting to watch them play. I think fans are excited about Tomasino. They're hopeful that Tolvanen keeps it going. Now you got the number six overall pick coming in. Maybe it's just a matter of circumstance and injury, and he's going to be a key part of your team. Cunning developing. You hope Fabro. I mean, there's a lot of – and then obviously that fourth line, which is just the hallowed – you know.
It's untouchable.
Nucleus of the team. But it comes down to – so much of it comes down to the two guys who the Preds just tried to unload and were unsuccessful in doing so.
And now, not only were they unsuccessful in doing so with Johansson and Duchesne – but I said it yesterday, like, to me, that's it. Like, you're stuck with these guys now.
Yes.
And you're probably stuck with these guys for the long haul, not just in the short term, would be my guess.
So you
got to find a way to make it work.
Right. So let's talk about players being upset, you know, and what it means. You know, is Matt Duchesne, what's he think of David Poirier right now, leaving him unprotected? 2 years after signing this big deal, proclaiming it a great day, and I went back and through that, you know, great day for hockey, great day for Nashville, and 2 years later, please take him to Seattle.
Yeah.
So what does Duchesne think? What does Johansson think, being unprotected? Again, my answer to that is be professionals and be better and shut everyone up and show us that you're worth that. Because if they do, and I think it's a big if on both fronts, probably a bigger if with Duchesne, based on what we've seen. But if they do, okay, well, this is a different looking lineup to me. I mean, a lot of what David Poile, he tried to undo that mistake. It didn't work. And now a lot of this is, yeah, he still has moves to make, and Granlund's a big one, but a lot of this is, please play better.
Yeah. But that's the strategy they've been operating under the last 2 years is, hey, please play better. Like, at some point, you just come to reality that's not going to happen. Now, I'm not saying it's guaranteed that Johansson and Duchesne are going to continue to be unproductive. To your point, I think there's reason for cautious optimism with Ryan Johansson. I like the way he closed out the year. Love the way that he played in the playoffs. So I think there's reason for cautious optimism because I also love the way Ryan Johansson finished against Arizona a couple years ago in the playoffs, and that did not carry forward the next year. So I'm not sitting here acting like I'm just going to expect Ryan Johansson to all of a sudden get back to 65 points. There ain't much reason for optimism for Matt Duchesne, I don't think. I mean, if you bring back Granlund and he's your second-line center, I guess the reason for optimism for Matt Duchesne at that point would be, all right, well, we're putting him on a line with Forsberg and Johansson, and we are letting that thing roll for 20 games to start the season and just see what it looks like. That, to me, right now, is the only formula because, I mean, we're at 2 years of sample size at this point, and Duchesne, really, regardless of where you put him in the lineup, has just not been productive. It's not been there. So I've got much more reason of optimism for Johansson than Duchesne, but I still don't feel great about either of them as they move forward.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like the next time the Preds are in a playoff series, I expect Ryan Johansson's best.
He will play well.
Because he brings it. But when will that be? Will that be next year?
Yeah.
Because there's just more on him now to get them there. And I don't know if it's cruise control. Look, I mean, we've both talked to Ryan Johansson about this, and I absolutely take him at his word. I mean, he's gone back and watched film of himself, and he's tried to figure it out. I just think that you can't manufacture the urgency that comes with a playoff series. I mean, everything is ratcheted up, including your opponent, and he responds to that because when he wants to really dig in and be physical with people, he's hard to handle.
He
can win
a
lot. But you know, I mean, I understand why that's not easy to capture and do for 82 games. But he's got to figure something out because they're not going to be in the postseason for him to rise up if he doesn't.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Kathleena texting in, "Don't worry, we still have Colton Sissons. We'll be okay."
Are you being sarcastic, Kathleena?
I sent some sarcasm from Kathleena.
Hey, look, Colton Sissons. It's a nice player. Colton Sissons centers this line that is so important. They protected one of the members who just started playing in the NHL.
Yes.
And in one of the games, I guess it was a game one? Yeah, game one against Carolina. They threw all four of them into the lineup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me.
That was something.
Look, Colton Sissons now is your Swiss Army knife. I mean, Colton and he and Yarncroke always were. Yarncroke more versatile, but Sissons is also a guy who can do a lot of different things. He's an important part of this team.
Yeah. Now even more so.
And by the way, Kathleena, might I mention the hat trick to get this team to the Stanley Cup final? Just saying.
There you go. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to coming up next. We will do that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Blue Raider Blitz is rolling across the mid-state to a town near you. Led by Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders football head coach Rick Stockstill, this community-wide event will be guaranteed fun for the whole family. Each of the stops will include food, ticket giveaways, and a chance to mix and mingle with MTSU coaching staffs and with Lightning as well. Today's stops include Americana Tap House in Franklin from noon to 1:30, and later today at 3rd and Home in Nashville from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information on where you can attend, head to GoBlueRaiders.com/tour. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, talking Nashville Predators. In the aftermath of the expansion draft, Cali Yarncroke selected by the Seattle Kraken. And taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, if the Predators are toward the bottom of the Central Division next season, will Hines and or David Poile be out the door. I don't know.
Okay, to that point on my personal text line, by the way, I said to myself, I said, I'm not bringing up Jared today. Jared's out there with these Hall of Fame takes.
Didn't work. Here we are at 849.
Like the Brady thing, he must have been talking about the Titans. You know, all these takes around like, Jared. You know, it's like Seinfeld with Newman. Jared. But Jared is texting me, so I have to bring up Jared. This is what Jared texts me. Isn't the real message that Duchesne and Johansson have more job security than Poyle and Hines, and that it's on those two, Poyle and Hines, to make it work? Well, I mean, I would agree that they have more job security. I mean, if you're a player with an unmovable contract, you've got pretty
a lot of job security. Yeah.
And I would agree. Now, I will also say, do they have more job security than Poyle? I don't know.
Nobody knows.
I mean, we know that Poyle fires coaches. No one fires Poyle.
Right.
So, but I mean, I suppose I would agree, you know, that, yeah, players with unmovable deals have the best job security in the world.
In professional sports.
They may not enjoy the experience if things don't change, but they'll be there.
Let's go back to the text line. Got a texter that says, I think Duchesne is the one that needs to look in the mirror. Some believe he isn't a good locker room guy, looking at the pouting he did in Colorado. Do you think he still may have a chance of being traded? Also, which was better for us, Sissons or Yarncroak? Sissons anchored the herd line.
Traded for who, for what?
I don't think there's much of a chance Matt Duchesne's going to be traded. And look, I don't know that I buy into him just being a bad locker room guy. Like, from what I can tell, and granted, we were not around the locker room at all last year, but I was a couple years ago. From what I can tell, Matt Duchesne, pretty well liked in the room. Like, I don't think there's like this huge problem against Matt Duchesne in the locker room. But I think the bigger question to that is, if it continues to be a problem here and he's not producing and there's some friction between him and the coaching staff or him and management, which, look, if it keeps going this way, inevitably there will be. There, you can't just sit here this long and be unproductive getting paid that much and there not be friction somewhere. Like, it's, I think it's already there to a certain degree. It can get bigger. So that's a different question. Does it start to trickle into the locker room after that? But right now, like, I don't think there's some huge problem with Matt Duchesne in there.
I don't think it's like a players not like him thing. Now, I think coaches have had issues with Matt Duchesne over the years, right?
I would agree.
We've seen that, and I think we've seen it with John
Hines.
I don't
think he and Patrick Waugh were all that close, all those buddies.
Yeah. So, and I think, I mean, the criticism that I've heard, and before he got here, but also here, I think, times is sometimes, like, defensively, he doesn't give you as much as you're hoping for. Now, again, I think that, frankly, I think he responded last year in terms of all the things you want to see a player do and responded to the way they were playing when he came back in the lineup. I think there was a lot to like. You know, the overall production is what you don't like, and that's what you're paid that much money for. But I don't think it's some big thing with that. I think it's he and Hines is a question. But the trading him thing is just, to me, it's just off the table. I mean, you're not going to be able to move that deal.
I got a texter that says, what percentage chance do you think Tomasino is on the opening day roster? I think it's pretty high. Like, I think based on the moves they've made, I think based on some of the comments, more importantly, that David Poyle has made, I think Philip Tomasino is going to be given every opportunity to make this team. If I had to put a percentage to it, I'm going 75-80%. I think it's pretty high that he's on the team.
I mean, the obvious argument, the counter to the whole thing is, well, like if you sign Granlund back, you know, especially, is it better for Tomasino to be here in a bottom six role probably and learning that way, or is it better for him to be developing
in the AHL
until he's really ready? I mean, there's been some very positive development stories in the AHL from Milwaukee to Nashville over the years.
Well, he was one of them last year. He had 32 points in 29 games. It's pretty good down there.
So maybe it's just flat that he's ready. But, like, the role, what is the role for him? I think that's got to be carefully considered.
Brandon texting in from Pulaski, Tennessee. Being a contract year, I believe Forsberg is going to light it up. Certainly on the table for him as an opportunity.
Wow.
Now, the Predators are hoping it's not a contract year for
exactly.
Philip Forsberg.
If it's a contract year, then this whole thing looks even worse, much worse. If it's a contract year, I mean, you may be right. I mean, Forsberg will play with his hair on fire. I mean, I don't think effort's a problem with him. I mean,
no.
I think he's just a really good player. We've wondered if he can be the next level of player. At this point, I would say probably not, but he's very good. You want him. You want him on your team. Yeah. But you better hope, Preds fans, David Poile, that he's not a contract year.
And that you have an extension in hand at some point, very early in the season, if not before the season. Because if not, then we got a whole different conversation to talk about with him moving forward.
Then it's not a competitive rebuild.
Right. Let's go back to the text line. Got a texter that says, Johansson's numbers will soar when we insert a shooter that doesn't shoot it into the center of the goalie's chest, a la Victor Arvidsson. Not a big Arvidsson fan there.
A little shade on Arvidsson, huh?
Yeah.
It's a franchise record, goals in a season. And he did it in how many games? Like 60 games?
58.
58 games.
Yeah.
So, like, that year, Arvidsson was going to have, like, a 45-goal season.
Yeah. Well, his goals per game average that year was second in the league behind Alex Ovechkin. That was the company he was in that year.
How quickly we forget.
Yeah. Well, and how quickly that level dropped for Victor Arvidsson.
That's fair.
Let's go back to the text line. Ben texting in. All we got to do as fans is demand more from our teams, and maybe we'll stop getting in these long-term ruts. That's coming from Ben on the text line.
So be more like Philly. Maybe boo
so.
Everything.
Maybe so.
I mean, I hear it all the time.
You think that'll work?
It's soft market. Fans, media, soft. Too easy on. I mean, I get the counter to that is if you're firing people every 2 years.
Go to Knoxville. How's that working out?
Right.
Nate on the text line. I'm guessing these young guys have a pretty long leash when it comes to mistakes / lower level of play. I think the young guys will. I think one of the things that you've got to do with young guys, and you got to know this if you're David Poile and if you're John Hines going into it, there will be some mistakes that are going to be made, probably pretty frequently, and you've got to find a way to live with that and coach them through that. Now, what does that mean for your quote-unquote competitive rebuild at that point? Like right now, the roster I just laid out there at forward, Tolvanen, Cunnan, Tomasino, Glass, Trennan, Janot. Those are six guys that are still pretty young. Like Cunnan, I guess he's kind of right on that edge of he's not all that young anymore, and he's got a lot of NHL experience at this point, so take him out. So you got five guys at forward that are pretty young. That's almost half your forward roster at this point. Now, that changes if Hall is back, and that changes if Granlund's back, but still, there are going to be a lot of young guys that end up playing for this team this year. And look, I think that's exciting to a lot of Predators fans. I think one of the things that goes with that is there will be some mistakes made along the way, and there will be probably a lot of inconsistency along the way, too. That's very difficult to navigate through if you want to make a playoff spot. It is.
Don't forget Olivier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where, you know, I think John Hines, I think once the youth movement sort of was forced on the Preds last year, obviously it went very well. I think it went very well for John Hines. You know, I mean, I think he reached those guys. They got a lot out of them. And I think that you should feel, as a Preds fan, optimistic that he's going to do good things with those guys. But again, Duchesne and Johansson hold a lot of the key to how it's all going to go.
Will from Nashville, is Yarncroak the player you guys expected to be taken? Is that no surprise? Very little surprise that Yarncroak is taken. I thought maybe that Seattle would consider Sissons. Maybe they did. But Yarncroak, at the end of the day, I mean, the odds yesterday from Vegas were 1 to 10. It's pretty good odds.
It's not surprising.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically just came down to, was there any way to get Ron Francis to consider the two high-priced guys? And, again, it's no surprise at all when you look at his whole draft that he didn't.
Right.
I mean, there were better possibilities for him with more, I think, upside and probably less risk that he didn't do. So he sure wasn't going to do that.
Coming up next, we will get into the news of the day in the SEC, and that is possible expansion coming to the SEC with two very high-level, high-quality programs that could potentially be in the mix. We'll tell you who those two are coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.